Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest Stephanie Marone, whose new book, Optimism, Cultivating Magic Quality That Can Extend Your Lifespan, Boost Your Energy, and Make You Happy Now, is the latest of the compilation works that Stephanie has been doing in the last few years, this time with Dawson Church. And we welcome her to the show. Thanks for joining us, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me again. It's always a pleasure, Susan.
Well, this is a good book for these times. Where did you and Dawson get the idea to do Optimism?
Well, I think both of us have gotten involved in energy psychology, and
mm-hmm.
we've come to see in our own lives, each of us, that a positive attitude goes way beyond the roots of that. In the writings such as Norman Vincent Peale, you know, telling people just think positively and everything will be okay,
mm-hmm.
There's now neuroscience that shows you can actually change your brain. The neuroplasticity of the brain has been demonstrated now, and it really is that it's up to you what you think, and it can really produce changes in your life depending on the direction that you go. There's lots of material to support this. Anecdotal material and the whole movement of things like attracting like, the law of attraction, and also that's what homeopathy is based on, which is another form of energy medicine, which is like cures like. So there's a lot of basis for it, and both of us discovered in our own lives what a difference it made. And it's not just simply about thinking positive and everything's going to be okay. There's really a whole set of walking your talk actions that you need to take in order to transform your life and ultimately be a contributing member for the planet.
Yeah, one of the authors who I found very, very compelling was Helen Keller.
I know.
What an amazing chapter.
Isn't that beautiful? I didn't know that she had written an essay. For the listeners, she actually wrote an essay called Optimism, and it's in three parts. And
mm-hmm.
her whole... I mean, for Helen Keller, we know that she had a very amazing life and was a role model for so many people. But for someone like Helen Keller, deaf and blind, to come up with this whole approach of optimism in her life and the role that it plays, both within and without, she was talking about, it's truly inspirational.
Well, after reading that chapter, I suspect that Helen was a very advanced soul that came to teach us about energy in ways that were, you know, beyond her times when we would understand what she was teaching.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And the old thing of you're not given anything that you can't handle.
Right.
A less strong person would have folded under those challenges, but she rose to them.
And I believe she had a teacher that was critical to her success as well.
Yeah.
It shows that we don't do things alone.
Yeah, that's really true. Anne, famously played by Anne Bancroft in
mm-hmm.
the movie The Miracle, what was it called? The Miracle, blanking on the name of the movie, but yeah, anyway, portrayed in there.
Mm-hmm.
I was also struck by your chapter in here, Susan. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, I've been a student of energy management for some time, having run a busy practice, you know, being a writer and being a student of spiritual medicine. I just gravitated toward anything that had to do with energy management, including the teachings of the masters and the mystery schools. And it occurred to me that what happens in life, we really can't control much of it. Much is karmic, much is our destiny, our path, the relationships that are sent to us that are extremely important are probably chosen by soul contract and can't even be rejected very easily. I've tried to reject some of them and gotten lectures on, you know, the fact that no, we were going to be in this relationship. It wasn't up to me. So we may have a little bit less free will than we think we do in the important relationships and the important things that happen in life. So therefore, what are you left with? You're really left with how you respond to them. And my chapter is about energy management, management of fear, how we can not succumb to fear and other negative emotions, and basically how that preserves your energy so that you can do what you need to do on a day-by-day basis. For me, the day-by-day basis is surgery. And the surgery yesterday, I was supposed to have my partner who would help me, and that surgery would probably be about 6 hours long. My partner was not able to make it, so I had to do the surgery myself. So I had to muster twice as much energy as I normally would. And, you know, so again, lessons in energy management. You know, how you get through the day. It's not okay just to say you're not going to do the surgery. The patient flew in from out of state. And, you know, I mean, you have to make do. So that's why I'm a student of energy management. I use it in my day-to-day life.
And let's hear about how optimism fits into that management.
Well, optimism fits in because the positive emotions which lead to optimism, and turning away from the negative emotions which lead to pessimism, are choices that you make when you consider what is happening in your life. I think I was born optimistic, which is a blessing, because not everybody is. I think some people have to fight their way out of a more negative, fear-based environment, or depression, or chronic illness that is all around them. You know, they have their families are ill, they're ill. And so I was fortunate that I was probably born happy, I remember being happy. I remember in high school telling my friends that they needed to enjoy doing everything they were doing. Like, we were in a grocery store and they were complaining about shopping. I said, no, you really need to enjoy shopping. You know, you need to just find something in everything you're doing that is really, really leads to enjoyment. And so I think I always had that. And like I said, life throws curves. I mean, you've had some, I've had some. Some people have more than others. And all we really have is our response to that. So looking for the blessings, cultivating gratitude, because we all have many blessings that we can be grateful for. And then always having an optimistic outlook for the future.
And, you know, especially now, that's so important. And you know, we subtitled this book, Cultivating the Magic Quality That Can Extend Your Lifespan, Boost Your Energy, and Make You Happy Now. And when we say the magic quality, this is not, in our view, this is not some woo-woo thinking. This is really that it is a quality that you can cultivate, and that for the future of the planet, what good does it do to go into despair? It immobilizes us, and we are not contributing members of the world when we're in despair. I'm thinking of the, I'm sure it was way older than the old Christian instruction, our job is not to despair. That, you know, I think that's an ancient view. It probably goes way back before that, but I remember that often. My job is not to despair, and I realize that I can be so much more productive and contributing to the world when I move over into that choice, as you say, of having a positive outlook. And it's very difficult in these times. At times, it's very difficult, but there is so much to be grateful for in every day, just simply life itself. And I think that in a certain time period of our society, it was fashionable to be pessimistic, if not nihilistic. And I used to be one of those that would be criticizing what was going on in the world and spending a lot of energy on what was wrong,
right,
instead of what's right. And also, can we possibly find the solutions for what's wrong if we're coming from the total focus on what's wrong? I'm remembering being in a peace demonstration mm-hmm. down in the city for one of the Gulf Wars, and I've spent, began with the demonstrations against Vietnam, a long-time peace activist, mm-hmm. and, a Quaker background, so there's history there as well. But I remember walking along this, I walked along the length of the march as people were marching. I was just observing what was going on. And I came to the place, I passed one part where it was the old school activists who were doing chants about what they didn't want. Mm-hmm. And, 1, 2, 3, 4, we don't want you, are effing war.
Right.
That kind of thing, right? And then I went farther along the line, and I came to the 20-somethings, mm-hmm. and they were drumming and singing and dancing mm-hmm. and chanting about love and peace.
Right.
And
yeah.
so I just was so struck by that, okay, what are we going to get if we just continue to talk about what we don't want?
Right.
Are we going to get anything, in our lives or at a larger, on a larger scale in society? Or what if we switch that to the choice of putting out there what we do want and the positive rather than the negative? And I think there is lots of evidence to support that is what brings in something. I don't think the saying what you don't want brings in anything.
Well, if you want to see this in action, just study the life of Gandhi.
Yes, and
look at what he did just by, being the change he was wanting.
Exactly, and I want to say that I appreciate the contribution of everybody who goes out to try to say something against injustice in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I just realized that my way has now shifted and become,
mm-hmm.
all right, what is it I do want in every level of my life? My life, mm-hmm. my activism in the world, it just has become very important for me to state the positive, what I do want, rather than what I don't.
Yeah, and I think if people would remember that the purpose of the manifested worlds, according to the masters, is ananda, and ananda means enjoyment. And I try to remember that. I try to, irregardless of what I'm doing during the day, I really try to enjoy myself, even doing the tasks that I think may not be so enjoyable.
Yeah.
I project enjoyment into them, and then they become more enjoyable.
I know just what you're talking about, because I apply, I listen to people moan and groan about all the errands they have to do,
mm-hmm.
All the logistics of life. And I have, first of all, I try to limit the number I do in a day so that I'm
mm-hmm.
not spending my whole day.
Don't take the day over.
Right, exactly. And it can. But I also, when I'm out there doing those, I do something like I look at a person that I'm dealing with, say, a clerk in a store,
mm-hmm.
and I just, acknowledge that person. I see
mm-hmm.
them. I acknowledge them. When I'm doing that as I'm walking through my errands, instead of just rushing through trying to get them over with, it
right.
makes a world of difference. I come home relaxed.
Yeah.
So that's a little clue that I
found. You spend less energy.
Yeah.
It's really an energy management solution.
It really is. And people think it takes a lot more energy to greet
mm-hmm.
people all day long. But actually mm-hmm. it doesn't, because it feeds you.
And when you're enjoying something, the time goes by very quickly, whereas where you're resisting something, it takes a long time. I mean, just stand in line. Stand in a long line and try the two different techniques. If you start talking to everybody around you, then before you know it, you're at the beginning of the line. But if you sit there and resent and resent and resent, it just takes forever.
So, yeah, it's really true. Yeah, it's
time
true.
Changes.
Yeah, it's
time goes
true.
Quickly when you're enjoying yourself, and it goes very slowly when you're not enjoying yourself.
It is really true.
It is true. And the other thing, I think it may have been William James that taught this. It was one of the great teachers taught that we need to do nothing for more than 4 hours. In the morning, used to do 4 hours of surgery, then 4 hours of patient care, 4 hours of administration, and then 4 hours of ER work. I didn't sleep much then. That's what I was learning.
16 hours, Susan, not 16 hours.
But if you limit it to 4 hours, now sometimes in surgery we can't, but if I have a partner, I can often limit it to 5 or 6 hours. But we do really long surgeries, obviously. But if you can limit what you're doing And that just makes it crazy to have factory workers work 8 hours doing the same thing. You're setting yourself up for repetitive motion injury. You're setting yourself up for depression and you know, discontent. We have a biology about us. I mean, Dawson Church is all about that.
Yes.
And we need to respect that biology. And when we don't respect it, we get injury and mental discontent.
Mm-hmm.
So 4-hour rule, think about that. Don't do things for more than 4 hours without taking a break or, you know, changing it out.
That's a great idea. I'm amazed that you were able to accomplish that with all the busyness that you have in your life.
Well, it's just, it's a principle. So I try to, you know, not do a surgery aside, but try not to see patients for 8 hours a day, okay? Try to do, 4 or 5 hours at a time rather than 8. And it really does make a big difference. You don't get tired. I used to have to work 12-hour ER shifts, and oh my goodness, to do something for 12 hours, it gets old.
It's soul-killing, isn't it?
Well, you know, people get sick, too, on those kind of shift, 12 hours on, 12 hours off.
Yeah.
There was a lot more discontent and illness rather than doing things for shorter periods of time. So I think we could, you know, because we could design things better, we could make it easier on ourselves and also create less mental and physical illness. We're all here. I mean, ultimately, this whole existence here is about energy management, if you think about it. I mean, how do you manage I like to call it the daily bread you're given. The daily bread in the Lord's Prayer is really the amount of energy you're given every day. And I think one of the teachers, I'm not sure which one it was, said, you know, do you spend half of that regretting the past, you know, or hating people that have a different skin color than you?
Or
how do you use that energy?
Resenting what you're having to do in your day?
Yeah. Or resenting your boss or whatever, you know, whatever it is. I mean, if you don't like your boss, quit your job, you know.
And that's something. You know, I think that's that's somewhat easy to say, and there are a lot of people who don't feel that they can leave their job.
So, not right now, anyway.
Right, especially right now.
So, used to be you could.
Yeah, so really now I think it's about, this is your life.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to spend your day this way? And meaning, whatever your situation is, you can transform it in some way, because there's a certain reality. You know, people who, I'm thinking of women who are battered, or someone mm-hmm. who's in a job situation where there's an abusive boss. There's a limit to what you can change in your outer world, but there's ways that you can find a sense of peace in the midst of that. And you know, those questions are complicated, because someone's trapped in a job financially, they can't
right.
leave, especially in these times. Someone's trapped in the home. What do you do with those situations? There's a lot of people that respond to that and say, you know, what does optimism have to do with that? You know, these are appalling situations and people are trapped.
Well, I think I have the answer in one of I think it's in this chapter that I wrote in Optimism, isn't it? Where I had that boss that he
yes.
was actually Iranian and didn't like women.
Yes.
And
yeah.
he was
Tell
a general
story.
Surgeon. I was a plastic surgeon. And he was just very abusive, I mean, to the point of being totally illogical. But I was very fortunate in that I had all around me men who were trained at the Air Force Academy. Now, I'm going to tell you something about the Air Force Academy. That teaches you something. That, you know, those years of abuse they go through, similar at West Point or any of the academies,
yeah.
they come out with a wisdom that is really interesting. So they shared with me that wisdom, how you respond to abuse. First of all, you don't get emotionally upset by it. You don't take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
That saves a lot of energy, you know. Okay, he doesn't like women, you know. It's cultural. Not me, it's women. So then I decided to send him love. And so whenever I started to get upset, which is an internal measure, you know when you start to get upset, I would know that I had to do this meditation exercise where I sent him love. And even to the point of pulling off the road, if I was driving, I just would send him love. And then within a short time, his behavior toward me totally changed. And everybody saw it because he was, you know, he was abusive in group situations, or, you know, and then he became very, you know, really praising me and saying how great I was doing, and, you know, just totally, totally different. And I had done nothing different other than this this exercise.
Yeah, it's quite amazing, quite amazing.
Yeah, it's the petty tyrant theory. When you have a petty tyrant, you have a great chance for spiritual growth, and without a petty tyrant, your growth isn't so quick. You know,
yeah, they do challenge us, don't they?
Yeah.
I wanted to say something about, there's a chapter in the book by Carol Look. She's
mm-hmm.
someone that works very much with the law of attraction. And I had a discussion with her because there's people have really, what do I want to say, they've distorted that law of attraction. Like, okay, if I just sit here and pray for what I want, you know, I'll win the lottery.
Right.
You know, but that's not what we're talking here when we're talking about the magic quality. It's really, for me, it's really, and she says this too, that, you know, the law of attraction is a principle of nature and of life, and
mm-hmm.
it's not to be used to gather material wealth. That's not the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is about the body, mind, and spirit balance. So, and this is what we were talking about when, how do you want to spend your day?
Mm-hmm.
And it really is... A question to ask for the day is, am I attending to all three of those areas of myself this day?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how am I treating my body today? How am I treating my mind? How am I treating my spirit? And, you know, am I letting my mind take over and run everything to the detriment of my body and spirit?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that balance is one way to arrive at the place of optimism, because many of the authors in this book, the different chapters contributed by different people in all walks of life, there's a theme in there that optimism is our natural state. And what have we done to ourselves that we've moved so far from optimism? And when you look at animals that are you know, their natural state, babies,
mm-hmm.
you know, puppies, kittens, is optimism. You can see it in human babies, and you know. We there are many conditions in life that drive the optimism out of us. Those of us who have our basic needs met,
mm-hmm.
shelter, food, what else do we need? Our basic
air,
water, yeah, clean water.
Right.
Those of us who have those needs met, we have no excuse not to be optimistic.
Well, it does come down to a question of how much energy you have, though. Again, if you use your energy unwisely, you will tend to become pessimistic because you don't feel well.
Yeah,
I mean, really,
yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, that's really true. Yeah.
I mean, nobody who's pessimistic is real energetic. Okay.
Exactly.
I mean, they are linked. And you know, people I do surgery on ask me, well, when can I do this and when can I do that? And my answer is usually when your energy returns. You know, when you have energy, when you know, get up and want to go out and do something, then that's the time that you can do X, Y, and Z. But until you, because we do a lot of detox after surgery, so you don't want to start your detox program when your energy is low, because this isn't the time to do that. So
you're saying there's a natural mechanism that the body knows.
Eat when you're hungry, sleep when you're tired.
Yeah.
You know. Do you know, exercise when you feel like exercising, not when you're, you know, in horrible pain. I mean, if you have fibromyalgia and try to go exercise, all you'll do is end up in bed for another week. You know, I mean, you got to listen to your body.
Mm-hmm.
It's truly managing your energy at the very basic state, and immunity is very, very much tied to energy.
I like that view very much because there are people that feel like pessimists are realists, and I don't agree with
that.
They
say they are.
Yeah, I don't agree with that summation, you know, but they, you know, there's a lot of support for that to say, well, look at the world. I mean, it's a mess. But look at the other part of the world. I mean, we still have beautiful nature. We still have people accomplishing amazing things.
I have a theory.
The world.
What's I have a theory because I interviewed Amit Goswami so many times, I think probably about 10 times.
And
he's
he has a
wonderful
chapter
man.
In this, he has a chapter in this book that I asked him to write, which is the quantum optimism.
Optimist, yeah. He's a lovely man. But, you know, if you understand that consciousness is the ground of all being, as Amit has pretty much, you know, shown us, thank God for him, then if a problem exists in consciousness, so does the solution. And all we have to do is find it. And I love what the Indigo children can do, which are now in their 30s. Mm-hmm. They can find those solutions. And the, you know, the children who are being born in the world now are little masters. They're gonna be able to clean up all these problems because they can access what we call the, you know, the Akashic records, the zero point field, whatever you want to call it. But
the
they
universal
can access
archive.
The answers to all the messes we made. I know they can. They can even figure out the economic crisis. I know they can. I mean, because I know I take care of them. I see what amazing people they are at 6 and 7. I have no doubt that when they get to be 30 and 40, they will be able to access the answers.
And
I have a lot of hope. I'm very optimistic.
And that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
I actually have a lot of hope, too. I mean, sometimes I fall into despair because I'm very upset at what's happening with the natural world, how we're decimating our nest, and also upset about the way people are treating each other around the world. But
that can change.
Yes. And
probably in about, you know, in less than a generation.
Well, and I'm also just amazed at the transformations that we've already had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did any of us think that the Berlin Wall was going to fall? Did any of us think that apartheid was going to be dismantled?
Mm-hmm.
Or that
when it's time, it happens.
Yeah.
And it's miraculous. I mean, miraculous is just you're not seeing all of the forces behind it, many of them in the unseen world, you know, in the world of spirit. So, I mean, my teachers, my spiritual teachers are telling me we're in for a heck of the next 20 years. I mean, there's going to be rapid transformation in every aspect, government, politics, medicine, you know, just name it. And we're going to have a remarkable growth spurt where we start doing things right. And I have no reason not to believe them, you know.
And that's good news. And I think transition times are, from the microcosm to the macrocosm are always hard.
It is.
You know, it's always hard to go through big changes, but what's waiting for us on the other side of those changes? I agree with you. I think it's very positive, and I'm just also amazed at young people today too. That what I'm seeing, which I think is so wonderful, is what people of baby boomer generation and older had to do a lot of work to undo their emotional scarring.
Mm-hmm.
And so. Excuse me. I'm seeing younger people who have actually gotten some of their needs met, their emotional needs met as they're growing up,
mm-hmm.
and because there's a change in the whole view of parenting, and so, and I'm talking about in the Western world, where they're arriving in their 20s without a ton of emotional baggage, and
mm-hmm.
it's kind of amazing to witness. I'm just very curious to see what happens later in life.
They'll do great things.
Yeah,
they will.
They're
ahead of the game that, you know, maybe we had to go through. But that's part of what we came here to do, though. I mean, you know, you don't have as much free will as you think you do, because even if you reject something and go along the path, it's going to pop out again, you know, in another form maybe. If you, like we said before, if you don't like your boss and you quit your job, probably in the next job or the job after that, you'll get the petty tyrant back until you deal with them.
And, you know, there's just a simple little, I think it was Dawson in his chapter that gave this simple little exercise, which is just spend a day paying attention to your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite amazing when you start doing that, when you discover how many negative things you have to say about yourself and the world.
Mm-hmm.
When you're going through a day, you know, there's all this self-criticism and, of course, criticism of others because the two go together. And it's when I think it really is a loving place to start to look at how many negative things you say about yourself in a day,
mm-hmm.
and start really every time you say that, every time you you start paying attention, every time you hear one of those, say something nice instead.
Right.
And start training your mind to not be so hard on yourself. And that is a way to begin that self-love that translates mm-hmm. into self-care of body, mind, and spirit, that then translates into better care of others, better treatment of others.
I've had something my whole life that relates to that. I can remember when I was 3 or 4, looking in the mirror and saying to myself, I love you. It wasn't me saying to myself, though. It was my soul
right.
saying to the child. And even now when I pass a mirror and look, I still get that thought of love from my soul to me.
And that's such a beautiful thing to add to the energy pool of the world.
Isn't it?
It is really great. If everybody were doing that, I think we'd be in a lot better shape in the
yeah.
world.
And, yeah. you know, I think about Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror. The man in the mirror needs love, you know.
So yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
That's a lovely way to put it. Yes. Yes, it's true.
Well, would you like to go through some of the authors in the book and maybe comment a little bit about how
sure.
you broke everything up into different sections?
Sure. I'm just looking at... I was just thinking about Dawson because of that little the exercise. He actually doesn't talk about it in this one. It must have been in another one I did. But he's
mm-hmm.
he's talking about the monkey mind and how we can overcome that monkey mind. This is the chattering in the head, and a lot of which is negative. And he has some very simple. He calls them quick fixes,
mm-hmm.
and they are to simply slow your breathing to 10 seconds per breath. And you can count it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a breathing rate of 10 seconds per breath will instantly make you feel calmer. So this is a way, like we were talking about when you're out doing the errands and you're getting more and more tense,
mm-hmm.
to just stop and do this. That can bring you back. So it's
yeah.
a 5-second in-breath and a 5-second out-breath, and you can just count if you want or just consciously slow it. And these are just simple little things to interrupt that... he talks about these as simple ways that you can start rewiring your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is he has, imagine a big white space behind your eyes. This brings your brain state from a predominance of beta waves, fast brain rhythms
mm-hmm.
that are associated with anxious monkey mind, to a predominance of alpha waves. And alpha waves are associated with being alert but still relaxed and calm. So this is a wonderful way to start calming yourself, because I think... some of what goes on in a day that keeps us from optimism is we're all in a state of anxiety because of all the uncertainties of these times and in
mm-hmm.
our lives. Many people suffering right now, losing their jobs, losing their houses. And you, some people say that, you might have the response of, well, what does optimism have to do with anything? My life has just been destroyed. Well, even with that, the trials of Job, right?
So, the answers are there. If they would just quiet their mind and follow their guidance. I mean, look at what J.K. Rowling did. I mean, you had her story in The Goddess Shift.
Yes.
She quieted her mind on a train, was given the entire Harry Potter thing, and then sat down and just wrote it up. All she did was quiet her mind, open herself up.
Yeah, and let's
and
add
she
to that
went from being a woman who couldn't even afford her flat to the richest woman in England in
yeah,
a few years.
actually the richest woman in the world.
That's right, there you go.
Yeah, and she was on the dole, as they say, so and a single mother. So,
she had to write the books, but she said in the story they were given to her.
Yeah.
I mean, that information is just out there.
Yeah, she got the picture of this boy with a lightened scar on his forehead.
Right.
Really
right. That was given as a package. And
yeah.
that's how inspiration comes. That's why I recommended your next book be on inspiration. Because we can all do inspiration. Now, I think you have to be in a positive mind, an optimistic mind, and you also have to have a clear mind, like you said, Dawson Church, the white, the calm, not the monkey mind, to receive the information.
Right, and you can't be in a state of fear and anxiety.
Right,
because
right.
all of that just drives creativity and inspiration.
Yeah,
right
optimism
out.
Leads to inspiration.
Yeah.
It does.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. So Joan Borisenko is one of my favorite people. I love her work.
I do too.
I love
her
message.
Yeah.
I just really do. So she has her chapter's entitled "Hope Rules," and it's a short chapter with very I love this, you know, 10 things you can do. So, mm-hmm. so don't you love the list? You know, she says, here are 10 brief reminders that will help you weather the transition and create a more positive outcome for yourself and for future generations. She's talking about the transition that we're in right now. And
right.
I think it's really important for us to have some guidance in dealing with this time because change is difficult. So I'll just quickly go down the 10 things, and I won't go into detail on them. Read the book for that, but give up trying to change the past, mobilize resilient thinking, drop the victim mentality immediately, exercise regularly, don't just sit there, do something, don't just do something, sit there, isn't that great, stay engaged with life, reverse the flow, I better say something about the reverse the flow because that is not clear what that means, helping others shifts the spotlight off your own troubles.
Mm-hmm.
Think of one new thing at the end of each day to be grateful for, and this, I think, is a wonderful practice.
Good.
Or if you could think of three, I think things in threes are always great.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one, connect with a friend.
Right.
So these are all things we can do right now. We don't,
right.
you know, we don't have to have any extra tools. We don't have to, we can be losing our house and our job and still be doing
mm-hmm.
these things. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the first chapter that I started with, another person I really like, her message for the world is Carolyn Mace.
Mm-hmm.
It's spelled M-Y-S-S, but it's said Mace. And she talks about invisible facts of power. And again, these are some facts that are quick to grasp. So fact number one, life is a spiritual journey. Fact number two, your biology and your spirit want to serve. Fact number three, intuition influences every choice you make in life. Fact number four, your intuition and generosity evolve as your personal power evolves. Fact number five, angels and grace are real. Fact number six, you are never alone, despite what we might think.
Mm-hmm.
Fact number seven, everything you do matters. And this, mm-hmm. you know, it's that the statement, I forget who it was, that quote that's used over and over. And, oh, it's Margaret Mead, I guess. Talking about how an individual can change everything.
Yeah, a small group of committed individuals.
There we go. Thank you.
Are never doubt that a small group of committed individuals can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has.
There you go.
And you know
Thank
what
you.
That
Thank
where
you.
That is? That's right over my station. I look at it every day.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, and that's what you're saying here, and it's very
yeah.
true.
And right next to it is well-behaved women rarely make history.
Yeah, that's another good one. Yeah.
Another favorite quote.
Rupert Sheldrake is another one of my favorite people, and he, the idea that behind that Margaret Mead quote is science.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a biochemist,
right?
And he's the one that came up. A lot of your listeners probably know this, but he's the one that put a name to the morphic field.
Right.
So this is the source that we can tap into to create a change together because
mm-hmm.
we're all so connected. And the idea of morphic resonance, that there is this connection
mm-hmm.
that happens between us where information gets exchanged. So, and that's the explanation for the 100th monkey phenomenon, that when a critical mass is reached of a number of people doing something,
mm-hmm.
then there's a tip into transformation. So this was the example of the monkeys on an isolated island. One of them started washing, some people say a banana, a yam, whatever. I don't know why you'd wash a banana. I think it must have been a yam. Because it had dirt on it, and they started washing it, and they realized, oh, they can get the dirt off. And so when the 100th monkey was doing this on this island,
mm-hmm.
then monkeys in a completely remote area from this area, no connection between the islands, started doing it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this explains how the Berlin Wall fell, how apartheid
yeah.
ended, you know, all these
right.
committed acts.
It was ready. It was ready
yeah.
to happen.
But all these committed acts
came from a higher
working,
level.
But also,
right.
committed people working and having the vision, and when
yeah.
the critical mass was reached, there it went. So
the biggest critical mass is about to be reached.
Yes.
In fact,
yes.
Some people said it happened this week. There's some information that the 2012 date was actually a Monday. So we may already be there. And so it's more important than ever to, you know, identify with the people going up rather than the people going down, because it's a spiraling.
Yeah, and the previous anthology that I did was Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change, which you also contributed a wonderful chapter to. But in that book, related to the 100th Monkey idea, was Jean Shinoda Boland's chapter on Gather the Women, and that's very relevant for this book as well, because mm-hmm. it's talking about enough women's circles around the world. There's something called the Millionth Circle Initiative. It's the 100th Monkey idea, but applied to women's circles around the world, raising the consciousness what we need to do to treat each other with more respect and mm-hmm. treat nature with respect, honor. It's beyond respect. It's honoring each other and honoring nature, the natural world, and how this will transform when there are enough circles of women doing this. So I just find these ideas very exciting. Mm-hmm. And I really, another reason why Dawson and I did this book is because we really wanted to add to the positive energy flow of the world and wanted to provide all this great information from all these great people to help people remain positive during this transition time.
Yeah, and I just want to mention some of the other authors. Jimmy Carter, Charles Prince of Wales, Queen Noor, Michelle Obama, Meryl Streep, Martha Stewart. She had to remain positive, that's for sure.
And how I really like that her chapter is entitled 10 Essentials for Achieving Success, and it starts off with what she was doing when she was in prison.
Right.
It's really
she didn't funny. Waste her time feeling sorry for herself.
It's pretty cool, yeah.
It is. Well, no, I mean, I'm more interested in how people handle adversity in the study of optimism than I am how they remain optimistic when everything's going right, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just not that
exactly.
hard.
Well, a number of the people in this book have had serious challenges.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm also quite glad that Steve Jobs is in here.
Yeah, that was very timely.
It very was. And I'm very sorry that we lost him. It made me very
right.
sad because he's such a visionary, and
mm-hmm.
what he accomplished just by going forward and doing it was quite amazing. And his chapter is entitled Stay Hungry, Stay Foolish.
Right.
And then another one, Judith Orloff. I love these lists because it really just goes right to the heart of things, and you
mm-hmm.
say, oh, yes, I can do this. Okay. So hers are four practical secrets to empowering your emotional life. Secret one, reprogram the biology of your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Secret two, uncover the spiritual meaning of your emotions. Secret three, learn the energetic power of your emotions. Secret four, map the psychology of your emotions. And there's instruction in her chapter on how you do these things. But I just find it very reassuring that there are people who are offering actual steps. You know, here we go. Here's what we do. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
Well, I never knew what my emotions meant, because I would have these emotions and they'd be totally out of context. I wouldn't know where they were from. Like every time I passed a certain anesthesiologist, I would just bristle with anger. Well, it turned out he was taking fentanyl and keeping it himself and injecting other things into the patients.
Mm.
You know, so you know, that's what. There truly is. Your emotions speak to you and warn you when things aren't right. And if you don't know that, you're going to miss the signals, and it could be dangerous for you or others.
They can warn you about yourself as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a number of chapters in here about what happened with people through serious illnesses. So
right.
Susan Russell
right.
is another one where her chapter is entitled Positive Reflections of the Illness Mirror. And I really like that image of illness. It was her own personal illness.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went on to help other people deal with theirs.
Well, when I was...
The idea that when the illness is a mirror for you, what to have you reflect, look back on yourself and say, what is happening here? What do I need to attend to that I'm not attending to in my body, mind, spirit?
When I had viral pneumonia, I was so ill. I thought I was going to die. I really did. I called up my spiritual father and asked him, and his answer was, no, you're not going to die. You're just going to feel like you're dying. So that was good. Then I was relieved, and then I just sat. I mean, I literally couldn't move. I needed help to get up to the bathroom, and I couldn't do anything except sit there or lay there in bed, and couldn't eat, couldn't. I had IVs, you know, I couldn't do anything. And it was one of the greatest teaching experiences of my life. My soul sat there and taught me the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't wasted time at all. But I couldn't do anything but learn.
Well,
I couldn't watch TV. I couldn't, you know.
Yeah, sometimes
couldn't read a book.
Sometimes we really do have to be felled.
I was totally, totally present for those lessons.
Well, that's quite amazing, because sometimes when you feel sick, it's very hard to do anything in terms of consciousness either.
Well, but I was in a totally altered state of consciousness.
Ah, yeah.
You see, where all I did was learn, because I couldn't, I mean, you know.
You were between the worlds.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I was
yeah.
not in this world at all. My oxygen was very low, for one thing, and I was on oxygen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but yeah, it was, I'd never experienced anything like that. I'm sure I've had patients that were in that state, but
How long did that last?
5.5 weeks. I mean, probably the worst of it, about 3 weeks.
I guess you learned a lot.
I did. I learned. You know what I learned? I can summarize it. If you stay on your path, well, number one, you will be guided. Don't worry about finding out things. You will be guided. If you stay on your path, everything will be given to you. You don't need to go out and search for anything.
And those are really important lessons and hard to do. But the big thing in order to get that kind of guidance is the listening.
You have to have the mind that isn't in chatter all the time.
You're quiet, so
yeah.
Information can come through.
Right.
Yeah. I was quite pleased to discover that Charles Prince of Wales is his chapter is entitled Harmony, and he's really
mm-hmm.
talking about what harmony in all aspects of life, politics, education, religion, the natural, you know, our treatment of the natural world,
mm-hmm.
how we're growing our food, everything, that harmony, bringing harmony into all of those is the key for our future. And he's someone that is really into sustainability, and I didn't know this about him.
Also holistic medicine. I've read a
yeah.
lot of his writings on that.
Yeah,
over
he really
the years.
Does
he's
have a,
very much into holistic medicine.
He really has a holistic view of the world and how it should, that ideas about how it can be applied to all walks of life and all of our institutions. So I was pleased.
Well,
to
he's a world leader. You know, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good that he has these ideas.
A compassionate world leader.
It's appropriate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, it is appropriate.
Rather than me. Which
yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, that's not going to help much.
Yeah. And the other, there's so many people that have amazing things to say in this book. I was very honored to have them all collected here. Another one interesting, Queen Noor
mm-hmm.
of Jordan. Just talking about, you know, what you were talking about, you'll be guided, and if you listen,
mm-hmm.
you know, you'll your path will be there for you. She's an example of, you know, she married the King of Jordan, and her chapter is entitled A Leap of Faith. She really, I mean, that was such a, she was a Western woman, and,
mm-hmm.
You know, married into a traditional Muslim society,
right?
And she, you know, was very nervous about that. Wasn't sure at all. No, she wasn't sure at all.
A brave woman.
Yeah, wasn't sure at all. It was the right thing to do, but
right.
She was just led to do it, and she was. It became this very deep, meaningful.
Yeah.
You know, happy
soul contract, though. I mean, it's got to be a soul contract. You know that.
Yeah, and she was able to really do a lot in the world because of that
mm-hmm.
position, and she took it very seriously. What her contribution would be, you know, she found great meaning in it. So it's just really amazing stories, all of them.
It's kind of like Elizabeth too. You know, when you hear her story, there's been some movies about it. Yeah, she was such a young girl, and yet
yeah.
she was thrust into the
yes.
the monarchy, and not at all in the way that would be suspected. You know, she wasn't the first in line, so to speak. So.
Mm-hmm.
But she was perfect for the role. You know, that was. So there's. I think it's destiny. I think there's a lot of destiny out there, and so that if there is destiny, why not just enjoy the ride? You know, that's part of optimism. Don't worry about what's in the future, because just have enough faith that your soul has lined up your lessons perfectly for you.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, for me, optimism is, it's much larger than most people think of that word, because to me it's also, it relates to the research that shows that people that don't feel, don't have a sense of meaning and purpose in their lives, don't live as long, and
they have more depression.
Yeah, there's so much.
Way more depression.
Yeah, and all kinds of statistics of health problems and suicide, and, you know, so humans really need a sense of meaning and purpose in their lives. And
they do.
And I see that as integral to optimism. You know, you can't just put on a happy face. It's really about what brings you joy in your life. You know, where do you feel a sense of meaning and purpose? And that's where your optimism lies.
Mm-hmm.
So I see those as very connected.
That's true. When I have a new project, and you probably have this too, when you have a new project and it's been given to you, you suddenly have a rush of energy. You know, you can stay up writing all night. You know?
Yes.
It's the energy's there as well as the inspiration.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's like that old Joseph Campbell, follow the bliss. For me, it's follow the energy.
Follow the energy.
Yeah.
That's why I wrote about energy management with optimism.
It's
very much tied to it.
Yeah, and I say this, you know, I'm an editor as well, so I say this to my clients in their writing, and I say this to the when I'm talking to people that I'm asking to contribute a chapter for the anthologies that I've been doing. I say, what are you passionate about? That's what you want to write about.
Right.
So, you know, where's your passion? That's energy, passion, energy. You know, what energizes you? That's where you want to write, and that's where you want to direct your life's work.
It is.
Yeah.
And we're blessed to have that, because like you said, not everybody does. Not everybody's at the level where they're given these gifts of inspiration and energy. And isn't it much easier when you're in that flow, you know, rather than when you're looking around kind of bored, not knowing what you're going to do?
I give thanks for that. I give thanks for
it
all the time. I don't take it for granted at all. I'm very, very grateful for that. And I'm looking forward to a future. I'm really happy that this transformation is going on around the world, because I'm really looking forward to a future where people are not so weighed down by the basic needs of life, you know, trying to supply those basic needs, trying to get those basic needs. It's just, it's criminal. We don't need to have so much of the world living in poverty. And, you know, these are the solutions that we can really hope the Indigo Children can work on.
It's going to come down. It's set to come down.
Yeah.
It will.
Yeah. 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 The system's unjust, and it needs to change. Yeah. So I mean, imagine the creativity that will be unleashed on the world when people are not having to spend so much time going
just surviving.
Getting water from a well miles away, and I'm really probably won't happen in our lifetime, Susan, but you know, maybe.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give the contact information for the book?
Thank you. Well, my website is www.stephaniemarone.com. That's StephanieMarohn. And optimism, it's available through all the usual outlets. And Optimism Book Online is the site.com for the Optimism book. But you can get it anywhere.
Yeah, we have it at our office if you want to come over there.
Go see Susan. But I also wanted to say I'm very excited, because my next book it's called What the Animals Taught Me, Stories of Love and Healing from a Farm Animal Sanctuary, and it's coming out in February. I'm very excited about this because this is my body, mind, spirit work. I have an animal sanctuary, and this is bringing it all together about the messages for us, the messages to us from the natural world, and what we need to listen to here.
Yeah, well, please send me a copy. We'll have you on for that book, too.
I would love to be on for that. Thank you. And it's always a delight to be on your show, Susan.
Yeah, it's fun. Well, we've been interviewing Stephanie Marone on optimism, cultivating the magic quality that can extend your lifespan, boost your energy, and make you happy now. Next week, we're going to have Eliza Dalian on, In Search of the Miraculous, Healing into Consciousness. And then the next week, Connie Stratzheim, Insights into Lyme's Disease Therapy, or Treatment, I'm sorry. And then on the 19th, Dr. Doug Brimmer, The Goose That Laid the Golden Egg, talking about the pharmaceutical industry. And then on the 26th, Lynn McTaggart, her newest book, The Bond. Noetic Science is on the 17th of November, the third Thursday, at 7:30 at the Dunwoody office. I'm going to be giving a lecture on optimism and talking about the book we just talked about and doing a book signing. So anybody in Atlanta is welcome to come there and talk with like-minded people about consciousness and spiritual medicine. And that should be it. Thanks a lot, Stephanie. I enjoyed talking with you, as always.
Thank you.
And we'll have you back on your Animal Sanctuary book.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Okay. This is Dr. Susan Cobb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week.